Good morning, Preston Road friends and guests. We're so glad that you're here. Welcome to our assembly this morning. Those of you who are gathered here in the room and those of you who are worshiping with us online, we're so grateful to have you with us. And those of you who are guests, we really do want to welcome you. Some of you are maybe here for the first time. Maybe you're here as a family member of one of the babies that we have blessed and dedicated today. And whatever brings you here, we're honored and grateful that you are among us. And it was a great day to dedicate 9 babies. And it is good to be in a church with babies. And we are thankful for that. It gives us hope for the future. And our job for the rest of us is to bless and support these families as they bring their children up in the Lord. A couple of things I want to remind us of. Men, please be reminded of our Iron Tuesdays. That starts this Tuesday, 7 a.m., 4 locations around town. There's information on that in your bulletin. There's a QR code there, all kinds of information. It'll name the locations. You don't have to be a member to go to that. If you are one of our guests, you're welcome to show up. Just going to be a time early in the morning for some fellowship, some refreshments, some time spent in the Word, and just growing together as we work through the book of John. So we are starting a new series today. And it's not just a sermon series. Our adult classes will be in the book of John. Our youth ministries in the book of John. Our whole church will be immersed in the book of John from September until the end of November. And we'll be working on a different unit each week. We've got bookmarks at the back that you can pick up to read along with us and follow along as we kind of move Monday through Sunday each week. Not just that you're hearing from me, we have members who are filming devotionals that we are putting on our social channels during the week. So Monty Harper already got us started this past week with some reflections on John 1. We have more coming out. Roe, I think, is coming up next week. And so you'll be blessed to watch our members reflect on Scripture in these brief devotionals. They are online. There's also a written version on our website. So if you go to prestonroad.org/journey, all those things will be added each week as we get to them. So we're in the Gospel of John, and most of us know, if we've spent some time in church or hearing sermons, we kind of have an idea of how the Gospels were formed. Scholars have helped us with this. They've helped us know who wrote first and who their audience was and what their purpose was, and we kind of know the differences among the Gospels. But I want to ask you to suspend that for a moment and just imagine with me a committee on Gospel writing. And I want you to imagine first Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and they're sitting around a table and they're making their plans. And Mark is going quickly. He doesn't stop for anything. He's immediately this and immediately that and moving through, and not a lot of teaching and a whole lot of just the action. And Matthew and Luke, they're watching and they're borrowing some things from him, but they're including some things on their own. And they start off with some genealogies, but there's some similarities between their gospels. John's over by himself. John's going to do his own thing. John's not interested in any of that. And John, in fact, doesn't even tell us the purpose of his gospel until the very end. In chapter 20, John writes these words. He says, "I'm writing this so that you may believe." That's what he says. "I'm writing so that you may believe." That's the lens through which we read his whole gospel. But John starts out his writing quite differently. So I want you to imagine John maybe even visually differently than the other writers. Let's imagine John in, say, a tweed jacket and a bow tie and a fedora. Maybe he's got a pipe. And he's just going to approach this a little differently. I want you to imagine John finishing a draft of his gospel and getting up before a gathered crowd in the first century, some Jews, some Greeks, some who have a background in Scripture, some who don't. And I want you to imagine him getting up to read these words. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. without him, nothing was made that has been made. And everyone nods along at these profound words. And maybe some of the Jews in the crowd are thinking, yes, this makes sense. God has spoken to us. We have his words. And some of the Greeks in the crowd, they're nodding along with the philosophy here, because the word for word, as Moni tells us in her devotional, is logos, where we get logic or theology or biology, the words about the body, words about God. And they're thinking, yes, the universe is logical and everything makes sense. In fact, Augustine tells us later on that there was a Greek philosopher who loved the opening of John so much. This guy wasn't a follower of Jesus. He just loved the opening so much that he thought that it should be written in big gold letters and plastered all over the place. So people are nodding along and they think this is fine. But then John gets to verse 14. And when he gets to verse 14, things change. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. And now the scandal hits. And his audience might be scratching their head. Some of them might be heading for the exits. Because everything he had said up to then is fine. The Word, God, orderly. But now God taking on flesh, that doesn't happen. God's not going to take the form of anything related to humanity. Eugene Peterson, the paraphraser of the Message, says it this way, that God moved into the neighborhood. But God can't move into the neighborhood. We know the neighborhood. The neighborhood can be messy, can't it? The neighborhood is filled with sickness and disease and poverty and suffering and sin and disobedience. It's full of uncertainty. It's full of decay and death. We've looked around. We know what it's like down here. Why would God choose to be a part of that? And yet John writes of God the Son, who's a man from Galilee. He's got sandals. He has a voice. He's out performing signs. He's working in a carpenter's shop. He's walking the streets in a busy society and being approached by the untouchables and outcasts. And John writes of God the Son, who stands trial for being misunderstood because he was perceived as a threat. And he writes of God the Son, who suffers a horrific death. So in John's gospel, God the Son doesn't arrive in the neighborhood on the wings of a nice little angel, but God arrives as a baby born in humiliating circumstances among the animals. John's not finished yet. The last verse of his prologue says this: no one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known. So we might think, no one has seen God. Well, some people have seen God, right? Moses, did Moses see God? Well, sort of. He was veiled and he only saw the back, whatever that means. Elijah, did he have an encounter with God? Well, it was sort of there, but God was in a whisper and he had his cloak over his face. So even Moses and Elijah have not seen God, but because of John, we have. We have an advantage over even Moses and Elijah, because as we read the Gospels, we've seen Jesus in the manger. And when we saw him lying in the manger, we saw God. And we've seen Jesus touching the untouchable. When we saw him do this, we saw God. We've seen Jesus forgiving the sinners. When we saw him do that, we saw God. We have seen Jesus calling for meek, merciful peacemakers. When we saw him say that, we saw God. Because John wants us to know this: if you see Jesus, you see God. If you want to know what God is like, look at Jesus. The author Brian Zahn makes this provocative statement. God is like Jesus. God has always been like Jesus. There has never been a time when God was not like Jesus. We have not always known this, but now we do. Now, if you're like me when you hear that statement, you may start adding footnotes to that. Yes, but we wonder some things, and that's fair. But the heart of his statement is true. God is like Jesus. And so to know what God is like, we look at Jesus. The problem is, we all have our own distorted view of Jesus. We have it. John's audience had it too. They had views of a powerful Jesus who would come and defeat all the enemies and take names. Or the philosopher Jesus, who had some nice teachings but didn't really make any claims on their lives. Or the hellfire and brimstone Jesus, who came to condemn everyone else. Or the not really human Jesus, who might have looked like a human, might have had a fake death like a human, but didn't really take on human flesh. That was some of John's day's distorted Jesuses. We have some of our own, don't we? The guru Jesus, who has some nice life hacks and tips to get ahead. Or the political Jesus, whose social views just happen to always line up with our preferred party. Or the resume Jesus, who goes on our bios to remind people of our good social standing. Or the Instagram Jesus, whom we put in our feeds to remind everyone of our holiness. Or the schoolmaster Jesus, who has somehow always disappointed, particularly in me. And a distorted picture of Jesus will lead us to a distorted picture of God. So in this series, we're going to let John paint our picture of Jesus. And just for today, I want to leave you one piece of that painting, just briefly. In John 1:5, we read this, that the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Everybody in this room, everybody watching online, knows what the darkness feels like. We have all experienced it. It's when a spouse tells us they're leaving and life begins to crumble. It's when the doctor walks in the room using words we've never heard before or at least thought would never apply to us. It's when the employer calls us in the office and says, you know, I think we're going to go a different direction. Or when a loved one passes away and everything shatters around us. It's when we learn something from a family member or friend that might even change our relationship with them. It's any time we feel far away from God. It's any time we feel abandoned by God. And in those moments, we put our hope in Jesus because he has defeated the darkness. He's the only one who has defeated the darkness. Jesus is our only hope. So John writes these things in the first chapter. He says that the world didn't recognize Jesus. We want to be people who do recognize Jesus. John writes that Jesus' own did not receive him. We want to be people who receive Jesus. We want to use this study to give us a clear-eyed picture of Jesus so that we can see him and so that we can see God. In that little story we glossed over earlier with Moses, God tells Moses, no one can see the face of God and live. But because of John, because we have a picture of Jesus, we have seen the face of God. And that is the only reason we have hope of living. Let's be standing as we sing.